Over the past few weeks, we've been looking at common cultural components of our Christmas celebrations and asking the question, how Christian is our Christmas? There are a lot of critics out there that say that Christmas is just a pagan holiday that Christians have appropriated and it's not right. And you have some Christians that say, oh, you people that are following these pagan practices, you're not right. Well, who's right? I don't think either one of them are. I think the truth is found somewhere in the middle. And so we have been looking at these various components. We've considered why we celebrate Christmas when we do, what's behind the date of December 25th. We've looked at the role of Santa Claus and Saint Nicholas, whom he is based on, a real life character that has a lot to, that we can follow his example. Last week, we took a look at some of the items that we use in decorating for Christmas, what significance they have and that they can have during this time of year. In all of these things, we have seen that they have roots in the ancient past. And we admit some of them have little or nothing to do with the birth of Jesus, as we find it in the scriptures. Some of these practices do indeed have pagan origins. But there's one familiar element to our Christmas celebrations that I believe goes right back to the birth of Christ, and that is the giving of gifts. Like many popular Christmas traditions, people have been exchanging gifts for a long time. Though trends and tastes may change, the acquiring and preparing and giving something of value to friends and family is something that's been honored by people all over the world in celebration of this festive period for centuries. Today, giving presents is one of the central focuses of Christmas Day, especially. Many families dedicate a lot of time and a lot of expense to this custom. For children, and probably for some adults too that will admit it, the chance of getting presents is often the highlight of the Christmas season. Christmas gift giving is such a widely celebrated event. We have a whole industry and marketing around it. There are stores that literally depend on Christmas shopping to get them through the rest of the year. It has become such a multi-billion dollar industry. The cards, the wrapping, the gifts themselves, and particularly this year, the shipping. For those who may not be in person, they're shipping their gifts at a record rate. Now this morning, I want to consider Christmas presents and their role in celebrating the birth of Christ. I would agree with the little sign that was just donated this last week that talk about it's not so much the presents we get at Christmas, but the presence of Christ that is there, and I agree with that. But where do we find the gift-giving and in our celebration? Where do we see that historically? Where do we see that in our lives today? What is the meaning behind it? And I want to ask the question, is Christmas a season of giving, or is it a season of getting? And the answer to that question, I think, will go a long way as to where Christmas presents maybe should fit into the way we honor the birth of Christ. I want to begin with the precedent of gift giving. Now, it is true that people have been giving gifts long before the birth of Christ was a recognized holiday. We saw that Christmas became an official holiday around the 4th century AD, and certainly the giving of gifts was going on before then. We mentioned a few weeks ago this Roman custom of Saturnalia. It was a festival in the middle of December. Actually went from December 17th to the 23rd. And a big part of Saturnalia, amongst all the feasting and the partying, was the giving of gifts. Now, people initially gave simple gifts like candles, cheap wines, fruits, nuts, and the like. But that was part of their festivities, was giving gifts to each other. Even before this, the Jews had developed Hanukkah, also celebrated toward the end of December. And it's known as the Festival of Lights, but giving gifts is a part of that celebration as well. There's a Hindu celebration of Pancha Ganapati in honor of the Lord Ganesha, which I hope I got those right, featuring gifts given to one another. And so it's not just the Christmas celebration. We see that there are roots historically that go back many, many years. But it was when the Roman Emperor Constantine converted to Christianity around 312 AD that signaled the beginning of the end of these pagan celebrations, particularly in the Roman Empire. But the people did not want to give up Saturnalia. That was their favorite. They just loved it. So rather than just getting rid of it outright, the Christians incorporated some of the traditions into their celebration of the birth of Christ. But they were always, as we even saw in the last couple of weeks, they would relate it to things that had to do with the gospel. And they likened the giving of gifts to the gifts given to the baby Jesus by the wise men as part of the Christmas story. As the years passed, we saw how the life of Nicholas of Myra, who became known as Saint Nicholas, and we now know as Santa Claus, he inspired the giving of gifts, especially to the poor and to children. His day of honor was St. Nicholas Day, which is December the 6th in the calendar, which was the day that he died. French nuns would give gifts of food and clothing to the poor on St. Nicholas Eve, which was December the 5th. And as the veneration of St. Nicholas grew throughout Europe, particularly in Holland, you saw the practice of gift giving as part of the Christmas celebration grow. Now, we did see that as folks came to America in the 1600s, many of the pilgrims did not look so kindly on the celebration of Christmas. In fact, it was outlawed in many of the cities in early New England. And even those who maybe were not part of their faith that would make merry at Christmas could be severely reprimanded by the leaders of the community. Kind of gives new meaning to the bah humbug of their attitudes toward Christmas. And that really hung on for a long time. By 1776, 75% of the people in New England were of the Puritan faith. And so Christmas wasn't celebrated for a long, long time. It wasn't until 1870 that Christmas became a federal holiday, and some of those restrictions were finally relaxed. Interestingly, up until around the early 1800s, people who did exchange gifts often did it not on Christmas Day, but on New Year's Day. And they often would only give one gift to a person, one gift per person, rather than the massive gifts that you see sometimes stacking all the way up, halfway up the Christmas tree that you see on Christmas Day. Today, Christmas is a huge gift-giving bonanza for retailers far and wide. And you see how that is developed over the years. I really do believe, though, that this practice of gift giving does have a sound biblical basis, going right back to the birth of Christ. In Matthew chapter 2, the passage that was read for us earlier, we see the real precedence of gift giving on that first Christmas. Verse 1 and 2 say, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, a magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and we have come to worship him. Then you drop down to verse 9. After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them, and still it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary. They bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their gifts, their treasures, and presented him with gifts of gold, of incense, and of myrrh. Here are literally the first Christmas presents ever given. And they were given to Jesus on the occasion of his birth. Now, we're immediately impressed with the gifts themselves, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. But we should not miss the importance of the words prior to the giving of the gifts. Notice when the wise men came to Jerusalem, they stated their intent. Where is the newborn King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east, and we have come, why? To worship him. Then in verse 9, it says that they saw the star once again. Let me make a clarification about that. There's a lot of talk about the Star of Bethlehem appearing again tomorrow. This conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn, which doesn't happen very often. As I had said, many scholars believe that it was that conjunction in the sky, which they can trace back to right around the birth of Christ, that the wise men saw and put that together with the scriptures of the Old Testament and came to the conclusion that the Messiah had been born. I have no problem with that explanation as to what the Star of Bethlehem was. However, when you see here in chapter 2, verse 9, that the star reappeared and went right over the place where Jesus was, that wasn't Jupiter and Saturn. That was the glory of God that was pointing it out. So yes, I do believe in a naturalistic explanation of the original star. And then when they got close, God sent the light that showed them exactly where Jesus was. Because again, I hear people on both sides of the argument. It was only a naturalistic explanation, or there's no naturalistic explanation at all. And I think that they're both right and they're both wrong. you can see how God was at work in that. But again, they saw the star. It showed right to where they were. And when they went into the house, before they gave the gifts, notice what it says. They saw the child with his mother Mary, and they worshiped him. He's the only one worthy of worship. We do not need to worship Mary or Joseph or the angel or the wise men or the shepherds or anybody else that's in the nativity scene. Jesus is the only one worthy of worship. And that was their mission. They wanted to worship. Then they gave their gifts. Now, what did these gifts demonstrate? I believe it demonstrated a couple of things. First of all, it demonstrated who they believed Jesus was. The early church father Epiphanius wrote that they brought gold because he was a king. They brought incense because he was God. And they brought myrrh because he was mortal. We sang that in the carol, "We Three Kings of Orient Are." Okay, they weren't kings. They weren't from the Orient that we think of. There may not have been three. There may have been more. We don't know. But what I love about that Christmas carol is that it explains the significance of each of the gifts. Gold was the only tribute worthy of a king. Incense was burned in the worship of gods. And you go back into the Levitical law, and specifically frankincense was to be offered along with the animal sacrifices by the Jews. And that was only given to God. And then myrrh was a spice that was used in a few applications back in the ancient world, but primarily it was associated with death. It was a spice used to wrap a corpse in preparation for burial. And so we see Jesus the King. Jesus, God, and Jesus, the human who would sacrifice himself for the sins of the world. All represented in the gifts that were given. Very emblematic of who Jesus was. Secondly, I believe these gifts symbolize the very best that these men could offer. Oftentimes, even in our own world, when someone visits another country, particularly dignitaries coming to visit perhaps the head of state or somebody in the government, they will bring with them something from their homeland, something native to their own country that is of value or significance. I believe that's what happened here as well. Gold, we know, is very valuable. We may not be so knowledgeable of the value of frankincense and myrrh in those days, but they were both rather rare. They were only grown in a couple of places in the world at that time, and so they were very costly. And the two places that you would find frankincense and myrrh both grown is northern Africa and southern Arabia. In fact, in the ancient world, there was one land that was known for the finest gold, the best frankincense and myrrh you could find anywhere, and it was the land of Sheba. Sheba today is known as the country of Yemen. It's way down the very southern tip of the Arabian Peninsula. You say, okay, big deal. I frankly believe that's where the wise men come from. I know I'm in the minority. Most scholars think they came from Persia and wherever. I really think they came from Sheba, and I think there's a biblical connection to that. I believe this fulfilled Old Testament prophecy about the Messiah. So if you'll give me a moment to support what I'm saying. In Psalm 72, verses 10 and 15, we read a prediction about the coming Messiah. Psalm 72, verse 10, the kings of Tarshish, which in those days, what we know now of is Spain, and of distant shores will bring tribute to him. The kings of Sheba and Seba will present him gifts. Sheba specifically is mentioned here. Then drop down to verse 15. Long may he live. May gold from Sheba be given him. May people ever pray for him and bless him all day long. Again, this is speaking of the Messiah. And gold from Sheba is to be given him. Why from Sheba? Because it was considered some of the best quality gold you'd find anywhere at that time. Then over in the Song of Solomon, or Song of Songs, depending on your scripture translation, there's actually three different times where frankincense and myrrh are both mentioned in connection with Solomon, whom the Jewish rabbis said was a prefigurement of the Messiah. And we see specifically in Song of Solomon 3:6, who is this coming up from the desert in like a column of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and incense made from all the spices of the merchant? Again, a connection here with the promised Messiah. And then over in Isaiah chapter 60 and verse 6, again, a passage recognized as messianic. Isaiah 60 and verse 6. The prophet writes, herds of camels will cover your land, young camels of Midian and Ephah. And all from Sheba will come bearing what? Gold and incense and proclaiming the name of the Lord. I frankly believe that you see the wise men coming from the land of Sheba bringing the very best they could give, the best of their homeland, fulfilling these Old Testament prophecies and indicating who this child was. He is King of Kings. He is God the Son. He is the human sacrifice for all of our sins. Very significant gifts that these men gave. I don't think they just ran out to the dollar store and said, quick, I got to find something to give. I did see a cartoon this last week that was kind of funny. It's the three wise men coming to baby Jesus, and one is being turned away. And the caption said, there was a fourth wise man, but he was turned away because he brought fruitcake. These gifts were very, very meaningful. They were very symbolic, and they were the very best that they could give. And I think that you see this intentional, meaningful giving is really the spirit of Christmas that we can carry on today. But I want to move now to the problem of gift getting. And it has nothing to do with the origins of gift giving, even if someone wants to chalk it up to pagan beginnings. No, I think the problem with gift getting is that it can take away from the real reason for the season. It can promote greed and self-indulgence. I think that's the problem we can find in this particular practice. I confess, gift giving, even gift getting, particularly gift wrapping, is one of my least favorite parts of Christmas. That's just ranks low on my list. I can relate with one author who admits Christmas gift giving can sometimes degenerate into a caricature of itself. For me, the difficulties begin with shopping. Surrounded by all the glitzy stuff, I can't figure out what I like or what might be appropriate to give or what the other person might like. The trouble deepens when the actual gift exchange happens. It just turns into a protracted exercise of reciprocal dissimulation, false generosity, phony delights, fake praises, feigned gratitude. What he's saying there is that gift giving and gift getting can sometimes even take away from what the season is all about. And I think we've got to be careful that we don't let that happen. I happen to agree with Charlie Brown. I think Christmas has become too commercialized. It's not easy to keep one's perspective focused on Christ or even the true gift that he gave. Christmas has become too commercial, too carefully merchandised, too crassly materialistic to lend itself to teaching any real spiritual truth about giving. And every year at Christmas, the buying frenzy gets worse. We always try to one-up from last year or one-up our neighbors or, oh, did we give them a gift? Did we buy them a present? Did we get them a card? That's always the thing, you know. You get Christmas cards, and you're saying, "Oh, did I send them a card? I gotta go get something." There's a sense now that there's an obligation. They sent me a card. Now I have to send them a card. They gave me a gift. I have to give them a gift. And they gave me a gift that I think might be worth so many dollars. So I gotta get them something that's worth more. That's the mentality that can develop around Christmas time, and I think that it can take away from what Christmas is really all about. And you ever notice how much stuff is bought, sold, given, and received that nobody really needs? You know, the terrible amount of junk that we give, and they sit in a closet or they sit in the garage, we forget about them. One of the things I've noticed in watching particularly grandchildren, where they have a tremendous number of gifts. You know, they tear open the first one, they're all excited about it, and then they put it aside, and they tear open the next one, and oh, they're real excited, and they put it aside, and after four or five of them, they don't even remember what the first one was. And in the end, you've just got mountains of torn wrapping paper, and are they really happy? Are we sending the wrong message when the emphasis is on gift getting? Getting what I want, getting what somebody else has, trying to keep up with everybody else. With the globalization of the late 20th century, We've seen Christmas expand into cultures that don't even recognize Christ at all. And yet they're giving Christmas presents. Why? I don't know. In Japan, where less than 1% of the population identify as Christian, people mark Christmas as a purely secular holiday. A commercial time where you buy presents and you give and you get without any reference to a religion at all. That's all Christmas has become. My biggest concern with the attitude of gift getting is greed. And Jesus said in Luke 12:15, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. And then he says something very, very significant. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. If there's anything that our materialistic culture needs to hear, that's it. Life is not about stuff. How many of you seen the bumper sticker, he who dies with the most toys wins? He who dies with the most toys is still dead and leaves them all behind. That's the truth. It's not about stuff. But unfortunately, in many people's minds, Christmas is about stuff. And it's the stuff I'm going to get. It's all about me. It's not even about Jesus. Now, if you go to a birthday party for a child any other time of the year, there's usually gifts, right? Who do the gifts go to? The child whose birthday it is. Now, I've known some people that say, well, you got to give a gift to everybody. So, no, forget that stuff. You give the gifts to the child whose birthday it is. But when it comes to Christmas, which is the birth of Jesus, we give gifts to everybody else. And sometimes it takes the focus away from Jesus. Now, frankly, Jesus was the gift that was given. That's one of the things I love about O Little Town of Bethlehem. How silently, the wondrous gift is given. It gives us that perspective that God gave His Son as a gift on that first Christmas. And the tag says, to the world, to everyone, to you. So yes, Jesus is the gift that God gave. But we've got to be careful that we don't allow Christmas to become very self-oriented. It's still about Jesus. The first five letters of Christmas is still Christ. And we need to keep the focus on Him. I fear that in a culture where bigger is better and more is better, and parents almost bankrupt themselves buying Christmas presents, we may be sending the wrong message, especially to our children. There's no direct correlation between the number of gifts or the value of the gifts and how much love is shown. You don't have to be keeping up with the neighbors or keeping up with other members of your family when it comes to giving gifts. Simple, heartfelt gifts can be much more meaningful than something you buy in the store. Let's learn the lesson that the Grinch learned. You know, maybe Christmas is something more. Maybe it's not something you can buy in a store. Let's not put so much emphasis on the presents that we miss out on Christ's presence, which is really what Christmas needs to be about. Now, I'm not completely against giving gifts. I think we ought to emphasize the priority of gracious giving as we celebrate the birth of Christ. I think we can teach others about Jesus by giving. Because, as I said, Christmas is about celebrating the greatest gift ever given. John 3:16, a verse that almost everybody knows. For God so loved the world that what? He gave His only begotten Son. The greatest gift ever given. And it was given to an unworthy world. Aren't you glad God doesn't keep a list of who's naughty and nice? We'd all be getting coal, wouldn't we? That's what we deserve, but God gave out of his love and his grace, not because we deserve it. In an excellent article written some time ago by Calvin Miller called The Gift of Giving, I think he gets to the heart of what I'm getting at. He writes, "The wise men started it all, some say. Still, I like the way the wise men gave their gifts, for they presumably returned to the East without expecting Mary and Joseph to give them anything in return. Their gifts were meant for the baby Jesus, but there seemed to be no obligation to their giving. Often at Christmas, gifts become a power play, resulting in obligation. Such gifts might subtly say, 'While my gift appears free, repay me in kind.' Or, 'Enjoy this, Joe, but you owe me now.' Let me suggest two ways to give a grace gift. First, make it impossible to measure the cost of your gift. My daughter's Italian mother-in-law has taught her how to cook authentic Italian food. So when my daughter wants to please me most, she fills a bowl with meatballs swimming in her marvelous marinara sauce, and I'm content. What does it cost? Who knows? Who cares? This is good stuff. Second, realize that non-material gifts are the best way to say, 'Don't try to pay me back.' One friend promised to pray for me all through the Christmas season. Another friend who knows I'm fond of Shakespeare gave me a book of Shakespeare quotes from his personal library. Didn't have to go buy it, didn't have to spend money, but how meaningful. It comes from your heart. It comes from you. And maybe if we could simplify the gift giving and the gift getting, we'll have a lot less strain on our bank account, a lot less stress in our minds, and a whole lot more meaning in this practice. I do believe in giving gifts. We've just got to be careful that we don't go too far and we don't send a wrong message. Christmas is a time to remember Jesus, to celebrate God's giving to us, including our family and our friends. It's not a time for fortune or selfishness or gluttony. What matters more than how we celebrate is what we celebrate. And if we can keep that in mind, we're on the right track. This year, we should ask ourselves, if our giving reflects the spirit of Him who gave His best for us just because He loves us. You know, on that first Christmas, God gave His Son. But there's also a receiving that has to happen as well. Somebody can go out and spend lots of money and have the most beautifully wrapped gift and give it to you, and if you don't open it, what good is it? And God has given us the greatest gift ever given, His Son, and many people say, "No thanks. I don't need it." They give it back. Can you imagine? We must humbly accept the gift that God has given. You say, "Well, what can I give in return?" It's perhaps captured best in the carol we know as "In the Bleak Midwinter." The very last verse says, "What can I give Him, poor as I am? If I were a shepherd, I would give a lamb. If I were a wise man, I would do my part. Yet what can I give Him? I'll give Him my heart." And that's the best gift you can give to God on this Christmas or any time of the year. Now, as we close, I would like to turn to one last passage. It's an Old Testament passage. It's 2 Chronicles chapter 9. 2 Chronicles chapter 9, I really believe that if we can maintain the right spirit in our giving, we will receive. Maybe not what we gave, but something far better. 2 Chronicles chapter 9 is an application of what I mentioned earlier, that I believe the wise men came from the land of Sheba. This chapter records a visit from the Queen of Sheba to Solomon, whom again the rabbis felt was a prefigurement of the Messiah. 2 Chronicles chapter 9, verse 1. "When the Queen of Sheba heard of Solomon's fame, She came to Jerusalem to test him with hard questions. Arriving with a very great caravan, with camels carrying spices, large quantities of gold and precious stones, she came to Solomon and talked with him about all that she had on her mind. And then down in verse 9, at the conclusion of her visit, then she gave the king 120 talents of gold, large quantities of spices and precious stones. There had never been such spices as those the Queen of Sheba gave to King Solomon. What were the spices of Sheba? Frankincense and myrrh and cinnamon. And 120 talents of gold. Do you know how much that is? 25 tons of gold. Think about that for a minute. That'd be a little tough to gift wrap. But 25 tons of gold and the finest spices you could find anywhere. But that's not the end of the story. Look down to verse 12. King Solomon gave the Queen of Sheba all she desired and asked for. He gave her more than she had brought to him. She came with an impressive load of gifts, 25 tons of gold, the best spices the world could offer, and when she left, she had more than she brought. I'd like to say the same is true of the wise men. They brought great gifts, the best their homeland could offer, very significant gifts about who this child was. And when they left, I believe they returned home with more than they brought. I'm not suggesting they had more gold, frankincense, and myrrh. I'm suggesting they had life. They worshiped the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And I believe that their lives were changed forever. When we give in the right spirit, we do get, but getting isn't why we give. And when we can keep that in perspective, then I believe we're truly celebrating the birth of Christ. And we will be blessed far beyond how we have blessed anybody else. So is Christmas a season of giving or a season of getting? I would say both. As long as we keep it in that order. As long as the emphasis is on the giving. And the giving isn't just stuff. It's giving from the heart. Giving our love. Giving things that maybe can't be paid back or can't be tabulated, that don't come from a store. That's the spirit of giving. Because remember, for God so loved the world, He gave.